Look at that. We're on. Okay. G'day, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Inner City Hermit podcast. I'm here with... I'm actually really stoked about doing this because I'm excited for myself because I'm very curious. So it's a bit of a selfish podcast. But I am here with my good friend, Rachel Curtis, who is also... What would you call yourself? Because you're a bit of an athlete of all trades, aren't you?
Yeah, I've done a few different things in my life. Yeah, leading up. So I don't even know whether you... I don't know. I'm trying to think of a title.
Yeah, no, I would say... you've competed. What? You're Australian netballer.
Yeah, I used to play netball competitively.
Yeah.
And then
you've just finished... What was the competition?
Yeah, so I've just done my first WBFF bodybuilding show, which was... very exciting.
Yeah, I could imagine. So that's kind of why I got you on, because I mean, I've been following your kind of journey, I guess, on Instagram, because I follow you, obviously. Yeah. And for me personally too, I'm obsessed with seeing different athletes and the way they kind of train. And for me, knowing that you are obviously from a netball background, and because netball is obviously so cardio based, and it's pretty much a complete different skill set to, I guess, bodybuilding. Run us through, like, what kind of got you onto the whole bodybuilding thing? Because it's so different to kind of netball.
Polar opposite.
Yeah, it's literally. Like, so yeah. Where did you kind of start up with the whole obsession with changing to going from, like, you know, just lifting weights to properly competing in, like, a competition?
Yeah. To be honest, I think I sort of had bodybuilding on my radar a little bit on the back burner, probably around 2017. I don't know how I initially found it, but one of my friends or one of the guys that I followed on Instagram competed, and I was like, oh, that would be really cool to maybe, you know, do one day, and sort of just thought about it, didn't really go any further. And in 2018, I competed in the World Cup over in South Africa for netball, and we ended up finishing that competition and we won. And that was sort of very hard to balance with my work. So I'm a theatre nurse for work. So a lot of the training for netball I had to do solo instead of training with the team. I found that I wasn't enjoying it as much as what I usually would.
If it's a team sport, it's very hard to... I know just from personal experience, we have players come in that are like on loan or something for football, it's real clunky. So you could be like at the top of your game for your sport, but if you're not like really integrated into your team, it's like...
Yeah. And I found that... So with my job, obviously doing shift work, the fitness sessions I would miss most of the time. So I was having to do, you know, lots of cardio, lots of running outside of those group time sessions. I was just missing that sort of group environment. Still managed to go through World Cup. We did really, really well as a team. We did a training camp beforehand. So everything gelled perfectly as a team, but I found that I was just really burning out. I was sort of trying to balance, you know, focusing on work and then also focusing on netball. And I got to the end of the World Cup and we ended up winning, and then I ended up with a few awards, and I thought, what better time to sort of go out on a high, essentially.
So that's awesome. So there was no injury or nothing?
No,
like
injury,
that
nothing.
You just kind of thought that's
and
awesome.
I thought that I don't know, I'm one of these weird people that will just keep trying to do new things, and I just want to keep challenging myself sort of as life goes on. I've always thought throughout my life that I don't ever want to get to say 40, 50, 60 and look back and wish that I did things differently, or wish, you know, oh, I wish I, you know, would have done X, Y, Z, or maybe I could have been good at this, or, you know. So I thought, what can I do next?
Yeah.
And how can I challenge myself? And I actually, so after netball, then that's when we were training together at Fitstop.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of doing that because I wanted to focus more on strength training. I've always been very leg dominant. So I love things like squats, deadlifts, things like that. But then it got to the point where I found that I was still craving something to train for. It's all well and good to get up every morning, but if you don't have those goals to sort of focus on, I found that I was just sort of like missing that competitive edge.
It's like, and it, I guess it keeps you accountable as well. Like, that's a big thing with, I guess, everybody. If, like, you know, a lot of the training that I do is towards football. If I didn't have football, you're kind of like, well, what's the point then? So,
like, what do you have? And then I obviously was still at Fitstop and the netball season started. And then obviously taking that step away, I was sort of just on the sideline.
Feel a bit numb.
Feeling a bit like itchy more than anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to just I didn't regret the decision to leave. I missed everyone, and I missed the competitive training environment. I missed playing so much. And I still do miss playing now.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd ever go back. Yeah. And it got to that stage where I just thought, okay, let's go to the drawing board. What can I potentially do? And then at that stage, I had considered bodybuilding, and I'd been listening to actually a couple of podcasts about bodybuilding and competing, and I've always been really interested. I'm not sure whether you know about Hattie Boydell and her journey.
No.
She's one of the world fitness champions, and she actually lives in Sydney.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so I've sort of like followed her for ages.
Is that the girl that you posted a photo with?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because so, yeah, I remember the name. Yeah. I saw the name somewhere. I was like, I know that name.
Yeah, so she originally started in a competitive gymnastics environment, and then she decided to start weights training and then went through bodybuilding through that path. And I've always just admired about how she's gone about prep and blah, blah, blah. So I've followed her journey, and then I had a few other people on my Instagram feed that were competing as well. And I just spoke to a couple of my close friends about it, and then messaged a coach, a few coaches actually, and then met face-to-face with Chris, who's now my coach.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, from the moment we met, I was like, yep, this is it. I'm going to do it. And we set out a plan. So we prepped for 22 weeks.
Far out.
Yeah.
That's hectic.
And did it. Which
That's
is,
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, man, it's like literally like just listening to that, just jumping in, it's so... Oh, like 22 weeks. That's
yeah.
So 22 weeks, and we're talking in those 22 weeks. We're talking no alcohol.
Yep.
No, like really rigorous diet watch.
Yeah.
Like
weighing every single thing, including like one of the big things that I really struggled with initially. You know, when say you scoop something out of a jar.
Yeah, you don't look
or
at it.
Like, you know, having residue left on a knife and licking it, like everyone's guilty about doing that. Nothing. Like even that, like little tiny and like tiny, tiny calories from liquids, sauces, like anything was just like, no.
So how did you track that? Was there an app you used?
So I guess from my experience, I've never actually fully tracked macros before, and I haven't calorie counted or anything. So this was a whole new experience for me. So basically when I started with Chris, he gave me like a rough outline of, he gave me sort of the option to follow a meal plan or to track macros. So initially I just stuck with the meal plan because that was easier for me.
Yeah.
So I just had a set of scales, and my meal plan would say 150 grams of chicken for lunch, 100 grams of say vegetables, and then 100 grams of rice. So then I just weigh everything out, and everything was sort of documented from there.
Yeah.
And that made it easier for me to stick to, rather than having say for a whole day like 200 grams of carbs, like, you know, and then having to figure it out myself.
Yeah,
I guess that was sort of the easiest way for me, and I'm really thankful that he did that because it was my first prep. I feel like if I jumped into it and was sort of trying to balance things here and there, I would have stuffed up my macros a lot, and I would have overestimated and overeaten, and it's easier just to sort of stick to something when you have a plan and you know what you're supposed to
and I guess too, having that coach that's watching, I wouldn't say watching, but like really keeping you accountable, saying like, this is what you need to do. Whereas I guess if it's kind of just you, like, I mean, everyone's kind of different, but having that, oh well, no one's gonna know, like I could have this extra thing, like I always find, even though Kia hates this, I always like kind of sneak something at the shops or something, but like,
100%.
Not being able to do that is just like, that's such a, to have the discipline to do that and do that for 22 weeks is ridiculous. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So do you think if someone was to do sort of the same thing as you do, would you suggest like a coach is like a must, or do you reckon?
Yeah,
a coach definitely.
I think probably the first thing that I would say, if you were interested in say competing, is that you have to make sure that your mindset is right.
Yeah.
Especially for females, it can be such a toxic environment. I mean, everything is sort of focused on, you know, losing weight, looking good, getting lean.
It's kind of like the opposite to this, the way society kind of looks at things.
And it's so easy to get fixated on dropping weight. And obviously when you're going into a comp prep, you will lose weight, and that's the aim. But then if your mindset isn't in the right space to realize that you are going to put on weight at the end of the comp and you can't stay comp lean year round, I think you're going into things a bit naively, and you will end up having that negative relationship with food and that negative, you know, sort of, you're sort of setting yourself up for failure mentally.
You're almost like playing with fire. Yeah. If you're not there and you're not like really expecting what's going to happen, you are sort of playing with fire. Did you see, or are you friends with anyone that was kind of nervous about that? Because you seem like you're kind of okay with it. Like you're
I didn't know anyone else that was competing.
So everyone sort of got the...
I just went into this blind. Wow. I went into this completely blind.
That's so cool. That's really intense.
So picture the deep end, and then that was me knowing... So the only person that I knew was my coach.
Yeah.
And then eventually later on, probably months down the track, I reached out to a few girls that popped up on the WBFF Instagram page, one who trains at Fit As.
Oh, cool.
And then we just became friends through that. So, yeah, I didn't know anyone. I guess for me going into it, I sort of knew from a training perspective. I sort of pictured it like, say, playing a netball game. You're never going to look, you know, how you do on comp day all year round because you work so hard to get there. It's like the Olympics, you know, you train and you focus to do that one event. And then you're never going to, you know, emulate that day after day after day.
Yeah.
Same thing as bodybuilding and prep. So I think I sort of went into it. And I've always had, like, a pretty good relationship with food. I've sort of pictured it, the whole prep, as food being fuel, not, oh, my gosh, I'm restricting myself.
You kind of change your mindset on... Yeah. I guess it's also changing your mindset on, like, your... It kind of sounds a bit depressing, but, like, you're not eating for pleasure anymore.
No.
You're eating for... This is what my body needs to get to this point. So, it essentially is like looking at food like this is fuel.
Like a machine. Like, I just pictured like my body as a machine. You know, you wouldn't want to put dirty fuel into your body.
Yeah.
Same thing with alcohol, like and events obviously coming up. So I did have events that were still during the 22 weeks.
Yeah.
So I still went along to those and still went out for breakfast and things like that and just managed how I was doing everything. So... for, say, events or birthday parties or things like that, I just had soda water and lime, which is fine.
Did you find that, like, social sort of, there was a little bit of, like oh, why isn't she having a good time?
Yeah, or like not even that. I feel like Australia is very, very fixated on sort of the drinking environment, and it's a massive part of life, especially for our weight, you know.
Yeah, I've tried to have sober weekends all the time, and I'm like, oh, well, no, that's gone.
Yeah, and I still remember my first sober weekend, and I just thought... wow, this is really freaking awkward.
But
at the same time, I think a lot of the girls and a lot of the friends that I had, I'd spoken to about it and I'd just said, this is what I'm doing, and they were prepared. But also then there was that pressure of, oh, surely you could just have one. Like, one isn't going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah, you know, if you have that one, but you have one Saturday, Sunday, that's two drinks. You do that over 22 weeks, that's 44 drinks.
Exactly. And then you think... the way that I worked it out was, okay, so if I have this one drink, then that means less food for me. So then if I am hungry, you know, all I'm replacing that with is liquid, and you don't feel full.
Yeah, because 100%, yeah, because the calories in, like, I look at beer. Like, that's one of my Achilles heels.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, you could drink six beers and not feel full, but the calories you've kind of intake is, like, ridiculous amounts, and you're like, well, I'm still hungry, so.
Yeah, it's really dangerous, and I, sort of anything that was going to jeopardize my, like, lean, how I stayed on track the whole time. Yep. I was just very wary of, like, anything that was sort of potentially going to jeopardize it. I would just go in there with a mindset that, no, I'm not going to have any.
Yeah.
It was very interesting that you brought up the point about having the determination and resilience to stay on track.
Yeah.
Because I thought that everyone just went in, stuck to their meal plan, hit their macros and said whatever to their coach, you know, told the coach honest things, and then, you know, you sort of go through prep.
Yeah.
But I was having a chat to Chris, my coach, at the end of all of this, and sort of towards the end, but right before we jumped on stage.
Yeah.
And I was so shocked about his response, saying that even people on comp prep, obviously no one's going to be 100% all the time, and even I had a slip up. But the amount of people that will say that they hit their macros and stuck to things and then will still sneak the odd chocolate bar, or say, oh, yeah, I definitely hit all my training sessions, hit all my macros, but then the scales went up and then he did their body fat percentage and then he was like, well, why? You know, obviously, you're lying to me.
And it's hard, like, because especially as a coach too, you're only going on what they've said. So if they're saying like this and you're like, well... science says, no.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard. And I guess... for sure, as a coach too, like, of course, the I guess not the blame, but everything kind of comes back to them. Yeah. So it's kind of like a bit of a kick in the dick for them.
100%. Yeah. Like, they can set the plan and, you know, say, okay, you need to eat this, this and this, train these days, but it's all up to you. Like, there is no one, even though you're sort of accountable to your coach, there is no one watching right over your shoulder being like, oh, Rachel, don't eat that. Or, oh, Rachel, you shouldn't go and have a nap and you really need to go to the gym. Like, you know, oh, I shouldn't have a rest day today. Like, you need to go to the gym. Like, it's all on you. And sort of the way that I went into that and the way that I sort of managed shift work and sort of not missing sessions was that I didn't want to jump up on stage and get up there and think, oh, I wish I would have hit that session.
Yeah, like that or regret.
Or I don't want any, I didn't want to go through and have any regrets about not doing it 100%. I just wanted to get up there and to think that, yeah, I did everything that I possibly could. I stuck to my macros. I did every, you know, everything possible.
Did you feel that way?
Yeah. Yeah. That's which awesome. Is cool. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I know a couple of people that kind of come out of it and they're like, they do have that kind of mindset. Like, oh, shit. Like, you know, this could have been solved in 2 sessions.
Or
this could have been solved if I just got up earlier and did like half an hour extra or something like that.
Yeah. So it was sort of, you know, I'd be on the stairs, like doing steps at 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night after I finished work because I just didn't ever want to have those second, you know, thoughts. Yeah. And I think that's probably comes from my competitive background from netball. And I think doing sort of the hard work has always just been so rewarding.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you think like having that, obviously, you know, team sport, that competitive background in netball, do you think that gave you sort of like a little bit of an edge to take on this challenge and really like, you know, take it with both hands and apply sort of that really competitive nature to the sort of a completely different sport?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm very stubborn and I think once I set my mind to something, I'll just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And that competitiveness definitely did come out. And yeah, I was always just making sure that I hit everything 100% to a T. In saying that though, I did have one slip up.
Yeah.
And my mum is an incredible baker. Oh, that's dangerous. My God. Yeah.
That's
so
dangerous.
Yeah. So when my brother and I moved in together, I think it was September. So I would have been about a month out from prep.
Yeah.
She made her amazing chocolate cake and brought it down and was like, oh, can you please have one piece? Yeah. Can you please have one piece? And I was like, that's fine. Cause I managed to work it in.
Yeah.
And that was fine. But obviously not having sugar for so long, just after you have one piece
you
and
hit
you're
the ceiling,
like,
you'd be like, hot.
Oh my
like,
God. Whoa. Yeah. And then you're just like, it's gone. Like, yeah. I just want more. And then you just, I had, you know,
and
two, three, four pieces later, 5 pieces later. And
there comes out, well, it's cheat day today.
Yeah.
Now,
and then so I was like, oh, well, you know, potentially if I did more steps today, then maybe I can make up for it. So then, and I just had, you know, 6 pieces of the cake and then ended up having spinach for dinner that night, just plain spinach in a bowl. And then was, you know, on the Stairmaster, on the, what is it? This not the ski erg. On the assault bike.
Oh no!
Yeah, on the that assault bike is, for 10 minutes, just sitting there grinding away, trying to get those cows.
Just watching the cows.
Yeah. Tick
I
over.
Recently, literally, I just started using this bloody Garmin thing.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'm addicted to checking the cows.
It's tick cool,
over.
Hey.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you you obviously wear like a Fitbit and stuff. Did that help you track a lot of the things that you needed and?
Yeah,
like
so
it was pretty accurate and
very accurate. But one thing that I sort of learned is not to, so I track my steps.
Yeah.
So throughout prep, I didn't have a cardio component, which is very lucky. With work, obviously working in healthcare, we do a lot of steps.
Yeah.
So my target for the first 12 weeks was just 10,000 steps a day, and then for the last 6 weeks, it was 15,000 steps a day, and then we sort of evaluated that for the last couple right before prep, and that bumped up a little bit just so I could lose that little bit of fat that was still staying on.
So for the cardio component, that's primarily for fat loss?
Yeah, okay, just for fat loss.
It wasn't really, so there, it was mainly, like, this is coming from someone that knows nothing about bodybuilding. So you don't really need a cardio sort of element to, for the, okay.
So basically cardio gets added in. It's sort of like an extra additional tool that your coach will use to sort of adjust things as you're going on. my coach sort of said that it was like a little extra tool that you use only when you have to. So if your metabolism is sort of reacting and making sort of that good progress and you're dropping weight and your body fat is going down, then you won't really add more cardio. So I was very fortunate that my metabolism was in a good place because I'd never prepped before. So I didn't have to, you know, do as much cardio as other girls. But girls that started in a different position to me that had maybe a little bit more body fat, or their metabolism wasn't responding in the way that it should have, or they had sort of thyroid issues, or they did slip up and, you know, eat off their plan, then they were sort of adding in more cardio. And then gradually, obviously, closer to prep, you sort of want to just do everything you possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's where you sort of just smash it in the last 4 weeks.
So is it kind of like was it a slow build up? Because it sounds like when you're saying, like, it seems like that last 6 weeks is where it gets really, you ramp it up.
Yeah. And so over the first sort of 10 weeks, I think the first five weeks I would have been on around 2,200 calories. That's a lot for a female to sort of start off with.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of like cutting down gradually. I'm really glad that I did do a longer prep so that the calorie cuts weren't as big.
Yeah.
And then also that will affect like your hormones, metabolism, your general mood, like your sleep, your fatigue levels. Everything is so touch and go.
I was going to ask about touch that. And go. Like, was there any days where you just like, fuck you guys?
I don't think I did. And I think that was because of the length of it. Everything was done so slow and
steady.
It seems like
it was
well thought out and planned.
Yeah, it seems like you did everything really perfectly planned. Like it seemed like I don't know whether it was like, you know, your coach or whether
definitely,
but or probably a mix between that and I guess your attitude towards it too. You seem like you were really determined. So, that's like crazy. Like,
yeah, because even if you think of it, like, say if you're going to do an 8 week program or what,
like an 8 week challenge, and I was like, this is hard.
Yeah, because your calories will go from say X amount up here to a dramatic lot. So you see those, you know, you're literally hungry.
Yeah.
Your mood is really bad. You get really agitated. You'll find that you're fatiguing.
And
you just got to drag yourself through those 8 weeks to get there. Whereas mine was sort of like a gradual, slow process. There were a few girls that I met that were on shorter preps and they said that their mood was horrible. Fatigue was high. You know, they were sort of really struggling with the amount of food that they were on.
Yeah.
So I think that for anyone who is potentially looking about doing a comp prep or maybe wanting to sort of diet down or lose a bit of weight, it's so much better for you to do it over a long, slow period of time. The more you sort of cram everything in and sort of do like a fad diet or a fad sort of cut, the worse it is for your metabolism and
like
the harder
like
it is.
Keto or
And then the harder it's going to be at the end of it as well, because you'll sort of have to make those drastic cuts during that short amount of time. And then all of a sudden you get to the end of it and be like, oh my God, I just want everything because was so restrictive. Yeah.
Did you find when you finished, like, you know, you obviously have your first meal back.
Yeah.
Did you find that, so your perception of how you thought your first meal where you could like literally get
whatever
you want.
Yeah.
Did you find that was a little bit of a, so for me, like thinking I'd be like, I would eat 8 pizzas and then just literally go into a coma. But did you feel like, you know, in your head, you're like, I'm going to eat this and this and this and this, but you got to that point and you're like, no, I don't really want to eat that. Did you find that?
Yeah, it was. And I think throughout every person who preps apparently goes through this where, you know, it's always like idolizing the foods that you can't have. And, you know, you see those donuts and you see, you know, everything on social media and you see so many people just like scrolling through and liking and just like saving things for later. And I don't know, I had picked out a few, like I wasn't really craving anything. It's weird. I just obviously having that food is fuel mindset and going through it and just thinking like I was a machine sort of thing and wanting to make sure that I did everything and hit everything 100%. When I got to the end of it, by the time that we finished the show that night, we were originally planning on going to Grilled for Burgers and then it was so late that nothing was open. So we finished at 11 and I was like, no, but then I was like, I was like, Uber Eats is open. Perfect. So we got pizza and I had 2 pieces and I was like, far out, this is so good. But then because my stomach was so small and it literally shrinks and you haven't had those foods for so long. So like cheese, dairy, any sort of big, heavy fats, And I obviously got like a chicken and camembert pizza with like loaded like hollandaise sauce went, on top. Like ham, I just went, yep, whatever looks good, get it. And then garlic bread. And so like all those heavy, big foods. And I had two pieces and just felt really, really sick. I then went out for breakfast the next day, and that was really nice because that sort of social thing I've missed.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too. Like, I mean, because a lot of the times you do go out for dinner, it's not exactly like food's kind of just a thing, but it's a lot of the social interaction. Where
massive.
And you know, when you're counting those, you know, every calorie, every macro, everything, you can't really eat a lot of restaurant foods, can you? So how did you go about, you know, being able to hit those macros and everything, but still obviously have that social life, you know, with just going out for like food or coffee or something, or breakfast with a friend or anything like that. How did you do that?
That's a really good question. So obviously having that long extended prep was another good thing in that sense. So having the higher calories meant that it wasn't necessarily a big cut. So I could still go out for breakfast. I think it was right up until the fourth week right before prep. So, which is great because bacon and eggs, or just even eggs on toast, you know, is something that's so low calorie that you can still get at most restaurants and most places. So that was sort of good. I'd always catch up with breakfast is good. Yeah. Breakfast is easy to do. And you could always just sort of manage around that. As it got to the last, you know, 5-6 weeks before prep, I was just catching up with people for coffee, and we'd just get coffee.
Is it like, would you just do black coffee?
Long blacks. Okay, cool. Cause it was sort of any extra calories from milk or almond milk.
Someone made that comment to me the other day. I was like, I love just having black coffee. They're like, what are you shredding, dude? I was like, oh, is that a thing?
Yeah. I actually love black coffee, and I don't know why people don't like it, but anyway.
I feel like a man when I drink it.
Yeah. Me too. I'm just like, oh, the long black things.
And
they're just like,
than you.
You know, that double shot really. Yeah. But yeah, so coffee was a good option as well. And we did go to a few places where I'm not sure whether you've heard of the app, but it's called MyFitnessPal. And basically,
I haven't used it. Yeah, but a lot of people, they like promote it on a couple of podcasts I listen to.
Yeah, so it's actually a really good tool, and you can download it from the App Store. And that's sort of how I sort of managed to balance things that weren't on my plan. So it's a really good database for anyone who hasn't had it. Maybe you can download it for free, and you can type in basically any food from any major restaurant. So like GYG, Grilled, Guzman, they even have McDonald's, KFC, a lot of other places, you know, main food chains have the calories for meals in there.
Oh, cool.
So if I was to say have an event or a birthday, we'd sort of go to Grilled, because then I could sort of track and say I'd have that burger, and then I'd just swap out the food for that and make sure that all my calories were correct.
Even that though is so hard, because you know you've got like a set, like what are the calories in that meal, but you could have old bloody Derek behind the counter just like
slap it on
whatever you want, mate. So even that's, you know, you're probably a little bit sketchy about that.
It is too, a little bit sketchy, but I think
there's obviously some room for error.
There is obviously room for error, and one or two, you know, calories difference from say Derek slapping on a bit of sauce
bloody Derek
isn't gonna make that much of a difference. I know it's sort of that, you know, comp prep wise, you know, you have to hit everything to a T, but if I was worried that say the volumes were quite big, I'd just, you know, scrape a bit of sauce off, you know, and leave it on the side, or I'd do a couple of extra, you know, 100 steps that next day. So that was always good. And then anything else, say I went out for breakfast or say I went out for lunch, I was kind of that idiot that brought their scales with them and would have an extra plate and would bring
literally
ham
just
and like whey bread and you know, that sort of
thing. Did you ever feel like, the first time you did that, did you find like, oh shit, everyone's looking
at me? I felt really self-conscious.
Did you get to a point though where you were just like, fuck it, I don't care?
I sort of thought, you know, this is my end goal and no one's really going to understand why I'm doing it. And if they want to ask me or question, you know, or have those opinions, and that's okay. That's their opinions. But I'm doing this for me sort of thing. And I don't want to have those regrets for not taking the scales.
You totally felt what it's like to be vegan.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, far out. I just...
everyone telling you like, you shouldn't do that. This is so bad for you. Like, you know what? Shut up.
Yeah. And probably one of the hardest things actually, like on that topic, my family... So I grew up in a small country town and I didn't necessarily have the best support going through this from my mum and dad. Like, my mum is very, very supportive and would support me no matter what. But, you know, going from that classic sporting background and, you know, having played sport for a competitive reason to then literally getting up on stage in no clothes and being judged on what you look like in, you know, say like a country mindset just didn't really match up with them.
Yeah.
And it was very challenging for my mum and dad to sort of understand why I was doing it. And I did explain it to them, but I didn't really have, like, I love my dad to pieces, but in his old fashioned country mindset, it was just like,
can't you just go and eat something?
Like, oh, you're so skinny. Oh, you're losing weight so quickly. Like, can't you just go and eat some food? Like, eat some real food, Rachel.
Yeah. And I guess, too, there is that. There obviously will always be, you know, that there probably are some negative sort of connotations towards the whole bodybuilding. Like we just kind of spoke about, you know, you're essentially, you're realistically going against the norms of a society in 2019. You know, you are watching what you eat. You are counting everything. You are getting up on stage and being like, look, like, judge me on what I look like.
Yeah.
And so to a lot of people, they're probably like, well, why would you do that? So I guess overcoming that, did you find by the end of it, like, the people who were kind of like, why are you doing this? Were kind of like, I understand why you're kind of so focused on this now.
Yeah, and I think the more that I had to explain it to people, and I really took the time to explain why I was doing it. From the outside perspective, it can be a very selfish sport, and there are people that go into it for the wrong reasons. Say, for example, they want to do, you know, get a bikini body, or they want to become Insta famous, or you know, they want to necessarily like challenge themselves. You know, there are sort of three different aspects as to why girls typically do it. And you do see, you know, the variety of people get up there and do it, but as I went on, I just made sure that I was explaining why I was doing this, and it was never about looking good for me. It was about me trying to beat where I started yourself. To then like to show myself what I could do, sort of thing. I really struggled with the fact that it was a competition based on what you look like. Any sport is literally win, lose. You know, you try and try and try, and, you know, you'll stop that goal, and, you know, you work together and you'll do that. But you could literally get up there and get beaten because, oh, you know, she looks better than you. And how do you take that?
Well, you were even telling me, like, before we started when we were just having a chat, that, you know, you get marked down if your tan runs off. And, like, for us as two sweaty humans, like, that's really hard. Like, I mean, like, you were saying that. Because from what I know, obviously, all I know from bodybuilding is just through watching Arnold Schwarzenegger documentaries.
Yeah.
But, like, you're pumping, like, when you're literally going on stage.
Yeah.
So, like, to find that fine line of, I can't sweat and I need to work.
Yeah.
Now, like, how did you find that? Like, were you a little bit, was that kind of, like, something that made you a little bit anxious or?
Yeah, I was really nervous. Yeah. And I am not a very confident person. I know it may seem like I'm a confident person, but I've sort of been very, I don't know, it's sort of been a great self-discovery journey in a sense that I have never felt more confident about who I am more than I have now.
So it kind of brings
it sort of brought that out in me. Awesome. And, you know, I think as a female going through sport, you know, we're very self-conscious about what our bodies look like. And I've sort of always had bigger legs and, you know, I've never been the stereotypical size 8, size 10 girl. I've sort of got that weird, like, hourglass, like, very leg-heavy shape. And I've never sort of felt like I've not necessarily, like, fitted into this, like, stereotypical society's view of what women look like. But it's sort of been something that I've been self-conscious about through growing up, and I always have been. But then now, like, realizing how strong and powerful I am and how, you know, training for a purpose and training to lift weights and training to do things, you know, I've just been like, nah, I don't care what anyone thinks now because I'm just so happy.
It's kind of like a revelation for yourself too. Yeah, because I've noticed, like, you know, obviously following your Instagram, a lot of the stuff you're doing is like, you know, I've put a lot of the kids that I go to school, like, that are at school onto you, like, a lot of the girls who are very similar, like, they're the rugby league girls.
Yeah.
They're obviously, like, they're really strong girls, and they don't really have that role model of, like, hey, it's cool to be a boss bitch.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool to be tough. It's cool to be strong, a strong chick.
Like, yeah.
So I guess having, you know, having people like you, and you know, like I've seen you do all your, like your fitness, like the clothing line, yeah, sort of stuff too. Like I'll let you talk about that at the end and give yourself a bit of a plug, but it's really awesome. And the fact that, you know, you're putting that out there, and not only is it, you know, helping other people, I think, see that, but the fact that you're finding out like, hey, this is me, fuck everybody else, this is what I want.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Like, that's so awesome. And like, that must feel kind of liberating, hey?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I sort of, looking back on all of this, I'm so glad that I went through this process. And I think that there's nothing more rewarding than finally finding out that, you know, women can be strong.
Yeah.
And there's not, you know, I think it's amazing, you know, whatever you set your mind to, whether, you know, your talents are, say, intellectual, music, sports, like everything, everyone is different. And that's a reason why everyone is different. You know, yeah. Could you imagine if there were 100 Rachels walking around, like everyone would be like, oh, there's another Rachel, yeah, you know, sort of thing. So you've got to find the thing that you are good at and the thing that separates you from other people. And you might be self-conscious about that, but that's the reason why you're you, and you should really embrace that and sort of take that, yeah, take that forward. And like, you should really push and show everyone,
yeah,
why you are the way you are. So that sort of took me a while to figure that out. And I'm so glad that I did go through that. So sort of competition wise, I was so nervous backstage. I have never been this nervous.
Yeah. Like, oh, dude, World
Cup,
imagine.
World,
oh,
Cup finals, like against New Zealand, like extra time, you know, in finals, like,
I guess, any, too, because you know, you've got your team behind you, yep, but when it's just you,
it's me. Mm. Yeah. And especially being in like a skimpy, tiny bikini.
Yeah, you feel very vulnerable. Hey,
so vulnerable, yeah, in heels with, there were 7,000 people there watching as well. Like, my family, friends, it was live streamed, yeah, you know, and I was getting judged on, you know, what you I've been like, working, yeah, towards for 20 weeks. You know, it was so confronting. And then not knowing anyone, you know, I knew a couple of girls by that stage, but then not having that team behind you to, you know, to make you push that last little bit and to sort of calm you down.
Yeah, or even just to help you just, yeah, through that anxiety, yeah, sort of stuff.
It, yeah, was so challenging, but there were so many lovely girls that I met there, and a lot of them, it was their first time as well. So, yeah, we sort of helped each other through that, which was really nice, but far out backstage. So on the morning of comp, we get our like top coat of tan, yeah, done. And by the time that I was waiting backstage to go on, I'd like had massive sweat patches like all off my arms. It was basically like white pasty and underneath my arms, and then brown, very dark brown here, and that obviously made me very nervous as well, because I was like, yeah, far out, I'm gonna get judged, yeah, you know, so marked down, not only down, are you like, not only, and I'm, yeah, worried about everything else, but then I'm trying to pump up and get all my veins to pop, but then I can't even, you know, keep doing that because I'm sweating off my tan,
yeah,
and I was just sitting there, oh, like trying with my arms aerated out, trying to not to panic, flapping, yep. And then I was backstage trying to remember your routine, because you have a choreographed sort of stage walk,
yeah,
and then I was like, far out, don't forget it, like you need to walk this way, like don't cut other people off, like walk here, just walk in your heels. And obviously, you know, they're not your normal just tiny little wedges, they're the massive huge high heels, and
it's an effort in itself, yeah, just walking in those shoes.
I know.
Honestly, I saw your video of it, yeah, and you did the hair flick, and I was like, I would have, yeah, fallen over on my ass 100%.
The amount of times that I fell, tripped, you know,
yeah, because that would have taken a lot of practice,
yeah,
hey?
So like, I had a posing coach to obviously get there. So before I started, I used to wear wedges out all the time. I never used to wear heels because I'm obviously quite tall, and have never sort of, I don't know, I've always fumbled in heels, yeah. So to then walk on stage, do a choreographed routine in heels, and to be smiling and to not have a concentration face on was really different and something that I've never really done before. So I had a posing coach, and I'm so thankful for her and everything that she, you know, helped me learn over, yeah, that process. And I feel like she had a big impact on me, obviously building that confidence up over the sort of, we were together for 12 weeks of the 22.
And how often did you do the posing training?
Twice, so every fortnight, sorry.
Every fortnight. And how long with sessions did you go?
Just for an hour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, which is good. But sort of over that process, when I first started, it was very much, okay, so this is how everything works, and laying out, you know, from there. And then we'd sort of go through a walk, and it was just learning how to walk in heels.
Yeah, so and you're then, kind of like a kid,
yeah,
again.
I literally felt like a baby giraffe,
yeah,
when I started.
Oh, man.
And then
I could imagine, yeah, like, far out. Yeah. Like, just being like, okay, hey, can you teach me how to walk?
Yeah.
So in the training, because I know Did you find it very difficult to, because there's obviously some positions or some poses that obviously make muscles pop more. Did you find it was very hard to kind of maneuver yourself? Because some of those poses look a little bit uncomfortable but very you have to make them look comfortable.
So you sort of have to, everyone does a different posing routine, which is different to other federations. So WBFF, you sort of showcase what your shape is and what sort of features you have best. So as I sort of leaned down more, Vladka would sort of say, okay, so we're going to sort of try and emphasize this feature, blah, blah, blah. Anything side onwards was very sort of uncomfortable, and you sort of have to create that S shape in your back and far out. Like, I was getting massages, dry needling, everything, because my back was so sore just from posing and making sure that everything was, you know, prim, proper, and standing up straight. I don't think
a lot of people see that.
They see the
weightlifting, they see the training, but they don't see the time spent just posing as well. Like, that's because I could imagine, like you just said, it's doing an hour of tensed poses.
Yeah.
Like, I could only imagine that would fatigue you as well. And then having to be like, okay, sweet. So I've done gym, I've done my posing. Let's get up in the morning and go back to gym.
Yeah. And then you've got to do your steps as well. So getting your cardio in and then making sure your food's right. So, you know, it's this big whole process.
Yeah.
Very, very selfish sort of period of your life, and you can't really get any distractions or be distracted and to take away from that. But the most rewarding part as well was that we filmed that first session where I was stumbling down walking, and then the final,
so seeing where you
and then to see the final, you know, on show day routine, like the difference was just mind-blowing.
That's unreal.
Was really rewarding as well. But yeah, the posing side of things was very, very hard and something that I've never done before, and it was very different. You know, it was very easy for me to jump into the gym and to do, you know, the lifting weights and to do everything else, but the posing side of things was definitely the hardest.
Is it still going? Yes, it is. Sorry, I just had to stop. I panicked for a second there. Sorry, Inner City Hermit followers, you guys know I'm very nervous about my having my SD cards. I just panicked because the minute wasn't going over. No, it's working. It's fine. Sweet. That's just me, because it's so silly. They do the mic and I can't see the thing. So I have to...
Yeah, it should be. Yeah,
I know, right? But so I guess leading on from that too, with all that going, like you just said, you know, you did the steps, you did the gym, you did the posing. Was there ever a time where you went, I don't think I can do this anymore? Like, was there ever that point? Like,
I did. I did have days where, you know, I struggled. And I think there was a stage where, like, I went through a little bit of tough things outside of, you know, in my life. Because like, I could imagine life.
Things, like, obviously life, you know, pops up, things pop up. And being that focused on something, I guess, would turn sort of like you have a little bit of a, I guess... You're kind of like, ah, do I have to deal with that now?
Yeah, so it's more that. Like you literally just want to have blinkers on and you just want to keep, you know, on the train tracks, focusing right towards that end period. There were days where, you know, I'd have the big long shifts, you know, say the 10, 12 hour, 13 hour shifts with no break. And then, you know, I still had steps to get in because I was... Scrubbed, like you said, operations all day.
Like 11, 12, 1 in the morning.
Yeah, 1 in the morning doing steps. Yeah, but it was just, I had on my wall at home, like, don't ever, you know, give 100%. You don't want to get up there having any regrets sort of thing. So I, whenever I'd see that, you know, I'd just think when I had that self-doubt, you know, time to get back out, time to get it done. Yeah, and I guess the other thing that I sort of had in the back of my mind was, you know, you're literally getting up on stage in front of everyone in a tiny, tiny bikini that fits in a Ziploc bag. Like, think about, you know, what you're going to look like. You know, you don't want to get up there and have any regrets. So that sort of got me through.
Yeah. So having that, like, sort of end, that end goal, like, this is what I'm working towards, and when I get to that point, I'm going to be fucking stoked. Cool. Just the thought, like I said at the start of the podcast, this is a very selfish podcast on my part, because this is all me being very curious. We spoke about before the podcast started about how a lot of the toughest times for like bodybuilders and people who do comps is obviously, and it's funny because not many people realize this, but is after the comp. Did you find that, you know, going from this like it's hyped, it's hyped, it's hyped, it's hyped, it's hyped, and now we're finished.
Done.
Did you find that you had a little bit of, you know, just coming from my experience of grand finals, and I'm sure, did you feel like when you got to that and you finished, you kind of felt there was a stage where you felt a little bit lost for a little bit?
100%, yeah. And I think, yeah, so I obviously competed, what is it now, 4 weeks ago.
So what is the last 4 weeks kind of
So I was actually really sick the week after comp. I had pharyngitis and was in bed, couldn't move, couldn't train, really, really sick, because I think I was just so focused and, you know, I gave 100% of everything, and it was to the point where, you know, I was waking up having, you know, 4 hours sleep a night, you know, just doing everything I possibly could to get to that stage. And then afterwards, having, you know, low calories, my body obviously just fell in a heap and I got really sick. So that week being in bed, you know, I couldn't train and I couldn't follow, you know, the stereotypical reverse dieting start that I wanted.
There's like a sort of structure to kind of come out of that comp phase. And yeah. Like, so that was kind of shitty.
Yeah. So I didn't have that. So I didn't have that. And then I wasn't at work. So I had all this free time at home. You know, I felt horrible because I was sick. And then I couldn't train. So it was like everything that I had the last 22 weeks, I've got nothing of that now. And it's literally just me.
Yeah.
And then here, you know, you're surrounded by everyone else in the reverse dieting stages. And, oh, I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm training. And, you know, oh, I'm only up, you know, 1.5 kilos from comp weight, whatever, you know, all of that in your face on social media. Yeah. And here I am in bed moping, you know, feeling like I'm not really sure where my next step is.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like the harder part was actually after it. Like, not even leading up. 100%. It seems like you had everything down, like, leading up to it. It's just the after part, you're like, damn it.
Yeah, and not even that, but, you know, I was just like, yep, jump out of your comfort zone, you know, do something different, do bodybuilding. And then it's like, cool, I've done it. Like, what next? And having those, you know, friends, family members, and people ask you, you know, what are you going to do next? Like, when are you going to compete next?
There's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. Yeah. And you hadn't even, you know.
I feel bad.
No, not at all. No. And it's gotten to the stage now where I hadn't even reflected on comp. Yeah. And I hadn't really reflected on, you know, why I did it, what I should have met, like how I thought I went, you know, whether there was anything I'd change differently next time, whether it would even be worth doing again. And it just took that time to sort of realize, you know, where my head was at, what I thought, and then we go from there.
You can't rush it either, because if you rush you'll
do a spontaneous decision, and then there are so many girls that will just go and do back-to-back-to-back shows, and their metabolism is just like here, there, and everywhere, you know, sort of thing. And I just didn't want to jump on, because it's so addictive. Like, it is an addictive sport in a way, because some people obviously do get fixated on looking comp lean, and then they want to look comp lean again, and then they just want to keep, you know, fixating on that body.
I can completely get that.
Yeah.
Like, I was just saying before the podcast, I've turned into a massive douchebag in that I am doing CrossFit now.
Woo!
But yeah, CrossFit. Yeah. But no, I totally understand. Like, you get addicted to that. Mm. Okay, like, it's probably the first time in my life that I'm like, I want to get to gym. Like, I want to get to gym now. I want to keep improving. So I could imagine, like, you get hooked. You're like, I want to do this more. Like, can I work out more? No, I need to rest. Because I could imagine you do a lot of, like, you do a lot of workloading, as in, like, no, you can't work out now because you've just done this. You don't want to do too much of this.
And, So leading out of comp, it was more sort of, you know, making sure that you were sticking to your diet. You couldn't obviously overload your body with any sort of huge lots of calories, because you've just depleted for, you know, 22 weeks. Your metabolism is literally as frail as a piece of hair. And if you chuck, you know, ice cream, you know, donuts, you know, whatever you wanted, pizza, you know, on it, your stomach. Oh, and then because you're so vulnerable, you will end up putting on pure fat instead of, you know, building muscle. So basically it's just like starving yourself and then going to an all, you know, expenses paid buffet and just gorging yourself. So you sort of have to slowly build everything back in. Training wise, it was, you know, getting back to just doing minimal steps, so 10,000 steps a day rather than 17,000. And then training wise, it was just pushing light weights and just getting your body moving again.
Yeah, just getting back to that, but just then that normal sort of not as intense.
Not as intense, gym. But then obviously being sick, I didn't have you know, I couldn't do that. So my throat was swollen, so I couldn't even eat any food. So I was just on Hydrolite. Like, I was just on, you know, plain Hydrolite ice blocks. I couldn't even get anything down. So that first week was really tough for me. And then I chatted and Skype called my coach, and I'm really thankful for that. And we sort of went through a plan and, like, had a big discussion about, you know, what I wanted to do next, and then got back on the bandwagon, back into training, and I have never felt better. Like, lifting wise, it is so great to be able to lift heavy weights again after being so depleted and not having any energy. Like, and that's the mindset that I had. Like, you can't stay comp lean forever, because I was lifting like half or three quarters less than what I would usually do in the gym. And it's so frustrating because you're sitting there and you just physically don't have anything left in the tank, and you know you should, your, you know, PBs are say 100 and whatever, and you're literally sitting there on 40 kilos and you're struggling to even lift the bar, you know. And now the difference between getting back into the gym and smashing the heavy weights again, it sort of reignited that fire.
And then I guess the cycle kind of
starts again.
Because I guess my next question, and kind of to like finish off with, like, do you kind of have an idea of where you want to go next? So do you want to continue doing this, or is there another challenge you kind of want to set for yourself?
Yeah, so I said to myself that my next big challenge is I'm going to do Everest Base Camp in 2021.
No way. Yeah. That is so sick. All right, well, I'm locking in a podcast in...
after that.
Yeah, 2022 or end of 2021.
Yeah, so that's unreal. Just something... thanks. That's just something that I've sort of wanted to do for a while. And I've spoken to one of the surgical assistants about it at work, because we've always sort of just wanted to do it. And then, so 2020, next year, we're going to do Kilimanjaro in Australia.
Yeah.
Yep. And sort of do that as a pre, you know,
just a casual walk
to sort
Mount
of jump in
Everest.
Yep. Yeah. And then next year I'm sort of about 75%, 80% in to do a show in July in Sydney.
So you are going
to
continue?
Yeah. I would love to just beat myself again. You know, it's sort of very addictive. And I think placing 8th out of 40 girls in
unreal.
Thank you.
That's
massive. I was really stoked, but then
definitely it just top 10,
it just ignited that fire to just push.
It's that sort of like that
it was great place. But it just you know, and then it's just like,
whereas, you know, if you got to like, you know, 40, you're kind of like, you know, I've done it. Whereas that 8 is just like, I got a taste, I'm so close.
Just like so close but so far. So I just never sort of wanted to have any regrets. I think if I didn't do it again, you know, I just wanted to make sure. So this time, I think I just want to keep pushing now that I know what I'm in for.
And come back bigger and better.
Hopefully.
And then work towards, obviously, Mount Everest in
2021. Yeah, or base camp first. Definitely not Everest, but then we'll see.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you so, so much for doing this.
That's all right.
Thanks for, I know it's really hard, you being a nurse, to find time, and you did come in on your day off.
Thank you so much.
I'm super stoked. If anyone wants to follow your sort of journey, and obviously I definitely want to follow the whole mountain thing. Can they find you?
So just on Instagram, I think it's Rach_Curtis_.
Nice and easy. So it's just Instagram at the moment?
Yes, just Instagram.
Are you thinking of doing any YouTube sort
of stuff?
I don't
know.
I've
thought about it, but I'm like, at the same time, no one's just listen to me.
Yeah, then again, it's also another thing. You're like, you're looking at food, you're looking at exercise. Man, do I have to film myself as well?
Yeah, maybe later on in the track. I'd love to. I love podcasts. I love listening to these, and I'm a massive podcast person. So I think that would be really cool to do something like that.
But yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's really, really good. And you are a beast. You're a liberated woman, and you're a really great role model for a lot of the girls that I teach. So you should know that you're doing awesome things.
Thank you. That's
no
very humbling.
Dramas. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to that episode of the Inner City Hermit. And just be nice to each other and have a fantastic bloody day or whatever you're doing. Anyway, have a good time, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.